Thanks for downloading this podcast from RNIB Connect Radio.
We have in the studio Connie Hsu, who's a jazz singer and world's first fashion model with albinism. And you have some sight loss. So, first of all, how did you become a part of the jazz world?
Well, I think that I always had this yearning for singing. And I did sing in a school choir, but in a choir you can hide so much. I enjoyed it, but it's not the same as solo singing, and it wasn't really jazz singing. And I guess I started to listen to jazz when I was a teenager, and I started with Ella Fitzgerald. Not a bad start at all. And just fell in love with the jazz ballads. And I think I love jazz because it's not just like telling a story. A lot of music, they tell stories. But for me, it is to be in the moment. And that's what jazz is really about, to be in the moment. And you improvise. It can be a lot. It can be a little. For me, I've always been a daydreamer. So for me, this is a perfect opportunity to daydream. I have like little stories in my head going when I sing. So it's like little short films, little daydreams. Mm. So that's partly why I love jazz.
Mm. So one of the things you chose to do in your life is to go into the fashion world.
So this is the crazy part of me, the rebellious, crazy person. showing her head again. It's like, let's just send a photograph to, had this black and white photograph, and I sent it to Jean-Paul Gaultier. I did a project about him when I was doing this art foundation course, and I thought he was great because he was so open-minded and he was so creative and he was crazy. And you know, he thought that men should wear skirts. And it's like, yes. So I thought, you know, I'm just going to send this photo. And a few months later, got a phone call from Paris, and they wanted me to fly to Paris and do his fashion show. It's a high fashion couture show. Yes, of course. I mean, that's the thing as well. I mean, I love modeling, but I didn't know any fashion models. I didn't sort of do my research in that sense that, you know, look up all the big supermodels. But of course, I was sharing the catwalk with them in Paris on Jean-Paul Gaultier's show. Kate Moss was there, Naomi Campbell was there. Mm-hmm. They were all there.
Well, let's talk about your life with albinism. You live with albinism. First of all, the benefit of those who don't know what albinism is, can you explain what the symptoms are, what the disorder is, and sight loss that you have?
So I was born with albinism. I'm Chinese, and I have altogether four siblings. So to have albinism is just not having melanin. And it's melanin that gives you pigment in your hair, skin, eyes, and so on. And so you can imagine when I was born, it was quite a shock. I'm supposed to look Chinese, and here I am, very, very white. Because I don't have melanin, then my skin is very light sensitive, so I have to be very careful in the sun. Sunscreen, sunscreen, sunscreen. And you have to cover up. But when it comes to my eyes, I am sensitive to strong light, like sunlight, bright daylight, even like artificial light, like what you use for filming, and so on. So those are the main things, really, that affect me, having albinism.
Is it detectable from birth?
I was born in Hong Kong, and I think my parents were told she hasn't got any pigment, and that's all they were told, really. So they were not even told that actually she needs to be protected from the sun. So I guess my family have to find out bit by bit that, oh, okay, she finds that difficult, she finds this difficult. So there wasn't much support at all in Hong Kong. And you just have to manage. That's how life was. This is pre-internet time, yes. if the hospitals and the healthcare staff didn't tell you anything, then you just didn't know anything else. If they didn't give you that information, then you just, that's it. It's very hard to find out more about it. And when it came to my eyesight, I think my parents took me to optician to try to sort it out. And that was very difficult too, I think, for them to try to understand exactly what the problem was. I think they tried to sort out my that I'm short-sighted, so that they try to fix. But of course, that's not the whole problem. I like to call it a cocktail of conditions that I have. Apart from albinism, I'm also a slightly long-sighted, short-sighted, and so on. So it's very complex. And I guess it is like that for a lot of people who are visually impaired.
So how soon were you aware that you had issues with sight loss?
It's when you're more aware of yourself and started to compare yourself to other people, like my siblings. They could run around in the sun, and of course Hong Kong, being Southeast Asia, is very, very sunny most of the time, almost all year round. So sunglasses, my parents got me sunglasses quite quickly. And I think I burnt a couple of times before we sort of figure out, okay. Don't think we had sunscreen back then. We use umbrellas, parasols. Yes, it's that's when I'm more aware, I guess, when I started to compare myself to my mainly to my siblings.
So did you have to work it out yourself that the sight loss was connected to albinism and that you may have to treat your eyes more carefully like you do your skin? Is that what you're saying?
I think once my family found out, then they did tell me about it. You know, they were quite open about it. And then I noticed myself, you know, that it was difficult in strong sunlight. So I think it's sort of a combination of my me being aware that I'm different and also my family telling me this is how it is and we just have to find solutions and get on with it. Yes.
Do you think people associate sight loss with albinism automatically?
I think, yes, first of all, you having albinism makes you stand out in the crowd. And I think it's sort of secondary, I think, the eyesight to a lot of people who don't know how it is to have albinism. I think first they probably see that a strong light is difficult if you have albinism. But I think the being partially sighted, I don't think there are much awareness of that at all. Apparently for me, for example, if I didn't have albinism, I could actually have a quite good eyesight using glasses and lenses and so on. But because my eyes lack pigment, it just makes all the other conditions so much worse. So invent some pigment for me and then I will have very good eyesight.
But if you walked into a room and she's got albinism, do you think they would think also, she may well have bad eyesight, I need to help her? Do you get that kind of reaction from people, or do you find more often than not that you have to tell them my sight isn't so great, can you help me?
I think people probably just see that you look different to start out with, and I think you do have to make it quite clear if you need any help or support when it comes to your eyesight. I sort of figured out how to manage it better, I think. You know, if you walk into a room and there are windows, I try actually to walk towards the windows and then turn my back to it because then I can see the room and I can see the people in the room. So if there is a meeting in a bright room with big windows, I'd be there rushing towards the seat that makes me sort of face into the room rather than towards the windows. So there are sort of strategies that you develop after a while. But I think, yes, I think a lot of times people can't tell that you are partially sighted, I think. But it all depends as well. As I said before, you have the same condition, but it's still very different for different people. So for me, it's very hard to explain, I think. A lot more careful and a lot slower when I go to new places. I need to figure out the steps and the ground and so on.
Yes, I mean, I know two people with albinism. One has a guide dog and another is like you. They don't use a white cane, but they do sort of try and find their way around and make the best of it. So you get the two contrasts. But how do you find people deal with you in terms of helping you, not helping you when you perhaps do something in your profession?
If I need help, I would ask for it. I don't usually assume that people will know about my condition. Either, you know, if it's like being light, having light-sensitive eyes or light-sensitive skin, I would actually say if I need to sit somewhere else, I need to be facing somewhere else, I would say that. But sometimes even that doesn't help. I mean, I have been situations when I have informed them, keep informing them, that I have light-sensitive eyesight, that my skin is light-sensitive, but they still put me in very uncomfortable environment. I mean, I should probably explain. I did a video interview a few months back, and it was commissioned by a major fashion magazine. They commissioned a team known for working for self-acceptance. And working for to being comfortable in your skin. They published books about it. So I thought, okay. I mean, they actually wanted to interview me about albinism, about my condition. So I got there to the set. I saw the light. I said to them, it's actually too bright for me. So I asked them to turn it down a little. They did turn it down a little. And I said, actually, it's still too bright. I can't open my eyes properly. That's when they kind of stopped listening. And
you actually could not open your eyes properly?
No, I mean, I was squinting and I was looking away. No, I just couldn't sort of open my eyes the way I'm doing right now in a normal lit room, in a normal room like this with normal light. And I said to them, you know, I actually have lenses I could wear that could help me. It will take a bit of time, I said. But they didn't react. They just said, oh, let's just start the interview. And I said to them, well, if I feel uncomfortable, I will look uncomfortable. And all they said was, oh, no, you look great. You look fine. And that was quite hard for me to comprehend. It was sort of like, what's going on? All these thoughts were going through my head. But then I realized they're just going to do it. They're going to interview me about being light sensitive, having light sensitive eyes, but they're going to feel me in very strong light, talking about their condition, looking really uncomfortable. But the funny thing was, I guess, even when I was little and started to think about what sort of jobs I could do, I didn't think about the limitations. I just thought about my passions, what I wanted to do. And luckily, we went to Sweden and there was support there, so I could get the education I wanted, so I could do things that I wanted. But I do remember one thing when we got there to Sweden and we went to an eye specialist. It was very much arranged by the school. I didn't speak much Swedish back then, but I do remember someone translated to me that the specialist said over and over again that because of your condition, because of your eyesight, everything you do will be so much more difficult compared to other people. Everything you do will be so much more difficult compared to your classmates. That's all this person said. There wasn't any constructive sort of advice or anything. That was it. But funny enough, being about 8, 9, didn't understand much Swedish. When someone translated that to me, I just thought to myself, oh, really? We'll see. So I don't know where it comes from, but I have this rebellious side. Okay, so you think it's going to be like that. I'm going to show you. So I just don't know where it comes from, but it's just there. But I think what I love about it is it's not so much that, you know, how we all have challenges in our lives, but it's more about how you handle them. So I think what I've learned, partly because of albinism and being partially sighted, is when you face challenges, I think that's what it means when they say, if it doesn't kill you, it just make you stronger.
Mm.
Moon, river, wider than a mile.
Thank you very much for joining us here at the R&IB Connect Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
For more downloads like these, visit rnibconnectradio.org.uk/podcasts.